observe St. Patrick's Day. Happy 311 Day.
Happy 311 Day to you.
Happy Dirtbag Culture Hour Day.
Happy Dirtbag Culture Hour to you today.
97.1 The Freak. I'm T.C. Fleming here with Jordan Richardson. We're in the middle of discussing the Netflix documentary series about Flight MH370, the Malaysian Airlines plane that went down that they never found, not the one that that went down 3 months later, that
right.
They did find pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly.
Yeah.
In Ukraine.
Yeah.
Which seems to be the center of the universe these days, mm-hmm. in some ways. It's all very interesting. I wonder if anyone has ever talked about a disappearance of a major airliner over a 311 song.
I think we're breaking ground.
This is revolutionary radio, you
every
guys.
Every episode, we do something that's never been done before.
That's right.
This is the one for that particular time.
I'd like to say we come original,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
if you would allow us such. Man, the beat in that song is nuts.
Is really
Chad
good.
Chad Sexton is going nuts on that. I don't know what he's doing. I'll analyze that, and next week's show will be maybe me breaking down some of my favorite beats.
If you wanted to, yeah, if you'd come in and just been, you know, I could have gotten some 311 facts ready. I think we should have.
311 quiz?
Yeah, I'm upset, you know, now, because I didn't really think about the fact that it was 311 until you started going on about it when we arrived.
I mean, that just shows you how we forget.
Now
we
that
say
I've had
we'll never
time
forget.
To, yeah. Now that I've had some time to, you know, kind of absorb the information, come around to it, I do that process pretty slowly, welcoming in new information.
Yeah, I thought you meant welcoming in the new day, like realizing what day it is and stuff like that.
Oh, that also goes very slowly.
I do that very slowly myself, too.
Yeah, and the way the show is timed out, like I'm coming online fully around the time the mics start.
Yeah, that's really great.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sure that everyone thinks that's normal and no one's disgusted.
No, not at all. Well, we have been going to lunch before the show lately to warm up our vocal cords at the very least.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's nice.
Yeah, so...
Where'd y'all go to lunch today?
Well, today we skipped.
We didn't.
Yeah. You talk about it and then you skip.
Maybe it's
guys.
Reflective in the show, but you know, here you are and they're breaking the fourth wall. We appreciate it though. Garrett keeping us honest.
You know, there's a large airplane disappeared somewhere. I mean, the fact that we don't know where it disappeared is just a huge, like, there's a lot of not there's actually a stunningly low number of airline tragedies, but there are, we all know about airline tragedies, and I think that this is probably the only one where we're just like, where's the plane? You know, this and the one that hit the Pentagon.
That's true.
That's where we don't know.
That's
we
true.
Can't find the plane.
No.
No evidence of the plane.
It is a very strange thing. I do agree with the sentiments of the grieving families. How do you lose a plane? It seems like they explained to us a little bit that there are multiple, nearly countless ways of how a plane is sort of being tracked as it's flying. And so the fact that a pilot can switch it off. I mean, I don't know. We're talking a civil liberties thing here. Like a captain is a captain, so he can do with a ship what he wants. And if that means he can choose to turn off the communications. But you would think there are an awful lot of regulations on someone flying an airplane in the world. And you would think that one of those regulations mean you can't turn off the communications. Like you don't have that button.
Yeah.
But maybe the unions and stuff, you know, get involved and
well,
say they
need
the button.
Well, it also just might be that, like, you need to turn it off and turn it back on to make it work.
That's true. Like a DVD player or something.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
a Super Nintendo.
Every piece of electronic equipment I've ever had, one way to fix whatever problem it's having is turn it off, turn it back on. I assume that holds
That's
for
right.
airline equipment.
So countless thousands of people, 35,000 feet above the ground at all times around the world. Sometimes we might just have to unplug it and plug it back in, like a router.
I mean, I feel confident that that is true.
You know? Yeah, that's terrifying. But, you know. It's
well, we're just talking about, like, the communications system.
I know.
System.
It's yeah. a risk we take to get up in one of those things every day.
Yeah, I don't know. If you got a problem with that, I assume you walked here today, you know? Like, driving is so much worse.
I haven't had to turn my car off and on in the middle of a trip ever.
My aunt
the radio.
My aunt had a car like that.
Really?
I think we told that story. on here before.
Yeah, we did.
She said, if the engine just stops on the highway, don't be alarmed. Drop it in a neutral. Hit the ignition again. It'll keep going.
And it never did on you.
No. We were fine.
Yeah.
She was being overly cautious.
Right. Well, something as equally as scary as that we learned is that potentially on an aircraft below the first class cabin is a hatch that doesn't really have a lock on the door. And you can walk to that hatch. You can pop that hatch. You can go down below and immediately be, messing with the plane's avionics, messing with the plane's communication systems. And you could just do that. And if you couldn't do it before, now you sure can. I hope they've put a lock on the door since they've released.
Yeah, you could in 2014. I would like haul Netflix into court if they haven't changed it since
no
then.
No kidding.
Having this mass thing where they're like, hey, does everyone know that you could just drop down there and make the plane go away?
I was watching this documentary with my dad, Stan, and Stan said, and I have to take my damn shoes off when we learned that part.
Yeah, no, all the electronics. Yeah, because the whole they're talking about, one of the ways that we knew, or the only way that anyone had any indication that the plane was in the air after it, turned off all communications was that one satellite module is pinging. And so it's like, well, where is that satellite module? How would you turn it off? How would you turn it back on? And then whenever they reveal the answer that it's like, at the front of the first class cabin, you just lift up part of the carpet. I was not satisfied with that answer.
No,
I don't want that to be the case. And it's just on a 777. It might be different. I've never flown on a 777, I don't think.
I think I have.
It's not super common. It's not the most used.
No, it's a big
airline.
One.
Yeah.
Usually you're flying for over 5 hours if you're on one of those things.
Yeah.
For sure. Overnight type of thing. Maybe they just trust everybody's just watching Breaking Bad or sleeping, so one's kind of...
We had a huge one, Dallas to Chicago, last time I went Dallas to Chicago. And I was, that might have been a 777.
Yeah.
I was surprised. And that is like, just because of what you're saying, of usually it's the longer routes, that's not that long a route. But there are a ton of people in any given day going between Dallas and Chicago. If you want to put them on a larger plane, you can sell the seats.
Right. Two very busy airports.
Yeah.
And then those planes might originate and, a new flight and head somewhere overseas or something from Chicago.
Yeah.
That might have been a 67, but that's a big aircraft too. Those are both big boys.
I was flying on that flight with our good friend Josh. And me and him talked throughout the whole flight, just chatting it up, having a great time. And we were in a row of three. So there was one woman, I was on the window, Josh in the middle, and then one woman on the aisle. And at the end of the flight, the woman turns to Josh and says, "Can I ask you a question?" And he's like, "Sure." And I a million things like of what this is going to be. I mean, we've been talking about some racy topics.
Right.
Whether or not you should discuss them on an airplane up in the air. Mainly going back and forth about Kanye had just started going nuts.
Okay.
And so we were
headed to Chicago.
And given all your takes about that next to a stranger, I don't know if that's a good idea, but it's what we were doing. And so I'm like, what is she about to hit us with? And she just goes, "How old are you?" He's like 40.
Yeah.
So he says that and she's like, "Okay."
Yeah.
That was the end.
Listen, if you know Josh, it's kind of it's a valid question. He's hard to pin down.
Anywhere between 12 and 50.
He's got youthful exuberance, but salt and pepper hair, slight build, but strong, athletic, strong, but athletic, but slight. It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell.
It is hard to tell.
It's also hard to tell if you can climb under the belly of an aircraft and mess with it, too.
Yeah. I did want to... The thing that I land on is the most plausible is that the pilot was making a decision to commit suicide and just took these other people with him. There is a lot of evidence against that.
Right.
Everyone you talk to from his family says that that's not something that he would do.
Yeah.
There's no indication that he was upset or that he was depressed.
And there's a huge leap between ending your own life and mass murdering people. There's a huge leap there. And he gave them a peaceful ending, if we are to believe that narrative.
he made all kinds of like YouTube like DIY videos of like helping out your plumbing at home.
Yeah. Just
seems I'm gonna advance that anyone who's making DIY home videos, like the suicide rate on that is lower than the general population.
Yeah.
It's just because I, you know, like the people in your life who would do that kind of thing, like they're just, they're folks that they usually got some answers.
Yeah.
Like they're.
That's fascinating psychological output to know that, like, if I'm trying to replace an oil filter on a 1996 Silverado Chevrolet pickup, that guy might be of sound mental mind.
Yeah.
I do. I trust him. I trust him when I watch those.
And, you know, there's just not, there's some evidence. There's a decent amount of evidence that the plane made the turn, but it's not a slam dunk at all. And so I don't know. I would say it's more than likely that that's not what happened, but it's the most likely thing that I've heard of. And so if you think that the guy did kill 239 people, well, you know, 238 plus him, I just don't know how. I don't know, maybe like a kind of insensitive thing to wonder about, but it's where my brain goes. How does that stack up? How do you rate that? Like morally, how do you grade that? Obviously it's bad. We're sticking there, but like how bad? Like every serial killer in American history, I think, has a body count below 239.
Right.
Or 238.
Right. With the exception of Paddock. No, Pat, that's 100 people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it was like close to 200, but okay. It wasn't 238.
It wasn't 238.
Paddock's also kind of gets into the, there's something about, so I was reading about, I think I mentioned on here, I watched the documentary series Trauma Zone about Russia from 1985 to 1999.
I cannot wait.
Insane period of Russia's history.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, it's super good.
The ending of a book right there.
Yeah, it's more or less on YouTube. If you just search Trauma Zone, you can find it. And so they briefly touch on one of the big media events in Russia during, like, immediately after the fall, kind of a testing ground for the state-run media rules have been relaxed. Now let's see how we can talk about things, was the trial of Russia's biggest serial killer. And I was, you know, this is definitely a weird thing, but I think it's a weird thing that I share with a lot of people. I've got some passing interest in serial killers.
Yeah, let's go there. Yeah, you're not the only one. That's for sure. There's an entire cottage industry.
So
I'd say
I read his Wikipedia page, and his Wikipedia page is stunning and disturbing. This guy, he was a sick puppy.
You're getting those real like glimpses into, you know, what I think is a stereotypical view on like how wild some stuff can be over in that part of the world.
Yeah, no, like his
his story, Russians do it better.
You kind of can only, like, you know, he was born in Ukraine. Just the, you know, everything that happened in Ukraine, World War II, and then immediately after, like,
right?
That's a they really caught the brunt of
right.
it. And his family's experiencing that in full. You know, his dad was involved in the war, and his mom seems like she's the one that really laid the groundwork here.
Mm.
And so I'm reading through the things that he's done, and just over and over, once a month for years, he's committing acts that I could never in my wildest dreams think, like, I don't think that I can physically do that. You know, like, I certainly would never want to, but like, I just, it's totally outside of the possibility of things. Whereas fly a plane for a while, I don't want to, but like, it doesn't sound that tough. I mean, especially if the end, like, you don't got to land it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was the great example of the gentleman who did that in Seattle a couple years ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who was a ground crew. And I guess he had just enough education on how to get one of those birds in the sky.
Boy, I think it was put the big lever forward.
But yeah, yeah, which is another thing that's blowing my mind. Like,
yeah.
I'm told this is one of the most difficult practices. It's one of the most difficult things.
No,
we pay surgeons
a
lot.
What I always hear is it's easy to fly, it's hard to land.
Yeah, 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 sure, which is terrifying. I've always heard that too.
But I'm just saying that it would highlight that, you know, like,
yeah,
if you're not trying to land, it's pretty, you know, and in both of these cases we're talking about, you're like, landing, mere details.
Well, if we're going there, then it begs the question, if this guy is planning to commit this horrible atrocity against 238 other souls is why he chooses to peacefully let them die in their sleep before he does it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that he can do it any other way.
I mean, I guess if taking down one of his employer's airplanes in a magnificent sort of way that would probably capture the world's attention, you'd have to wonder that maybe that's part of his deal, is that he wants attention, or he wants to have a legacy, or he wants to, like, live on in a way, because otherwise he could...
I hear you on that. I think that if you were, you would... It would make a lot of sense to me to leave a note or leave some kind of explanation.
Right. A manifesto or even a note.
Yeah.
So if it's a troubled guy who's looking to end his own life.
And not really an indication that he was. But yeah.
Yeah.
If that's
but
what
if
happens.
If that's what we're
he's
going.
He's hiding it from everyone.
And he's hiding it from everyone. Why does he have to, you know, why is he taking that extra step to commit mass murder?
Yeah.
Why is he doing anything other than climbing to one of those huge buildings in Kuala Lumpur? Or
yeah.
a bridge or something.
Yeah, just,
you know,
hang yourself in your house.
It's like, a dark topic, but if we're going to try to get to the bottom of this, it has to be explored a little bit. And it begs a lot of questions, but it doesn't, it's not like the alternatives are like any more feasible, like the CIA is bringing it down. Or, I mean, one of the direct links, you know, is we know that a group of Russian separatists brought down another Malaysia Airlines 777 4 months after this went down.
Yeah.
So, you know, not saying that there's anything there. There is no there. But, you know, there's another link in the chain a little bit.
Yeah. So one of the guys on the documentary thinks that the Russian angle is big. And I think that he definitely takes some leaps where I'm like, I'm ready to disqualify.
His theory of how that would have happened is extremely unbelievable, for sure.
Yeah, like he's saying you drop down to that electronics compartment we were talking about earlier, and you can just fly the plane by like plugging in a USB.
Yeah, and how? Come on, man.
Like other pilots on there that are like, this guy doesn't have the first clue about how any of this works.
Right.
So I'm inclined to say no, but given like just so. Bill James, the baseball writer, and he writes about crime a lot. A book called Popular Crime. It's one of my favorite books that I've ever read. He talks in Popular Crime about a system where, like, one way to approach these things is take the evidence you have and assign, you know, like, how many points out of 100, where, like, 100, you're like, this is proven, you know, 100's like a video of the person doing the thing, you know?
He wrote Moneyball, right?
No, it's,
oh, my
it's largely about him, but yeah.
But okay, right. It's about him. It's an. I'm just saying that it's an analytical way to look at something that seems so esoteric and.
Yeah, and so he's saying, you know, like the you should approach all cases this way of like, you know, say how much, you know, how many points you'd give a piece of evidence. For the idea that Russian hijackers were controlling the plane from the electronics bay and flew it not to Russia but to Kazakhstan and put it down there for the sole purpose of the headlines about the flight overtaking the headlines about the Russian invasion of Crimea, I would think that if you just said that to me, like, then how many points on the 0 to 100 system could we get to support a theory that insane?
Yeah.
I'd be like... Zero?
Yeah, very.
Maybe five?
Very few.
Given that, he gets way more points than I thought he would. He's looking at the manifest for, like, who are the Russians on the plane.
Right.
It's not zero. He gets a couple pings. He looks at the pings. One of them is, like, two rows from the electronics bay that they got to get in.
Completely.
And then another thing we haven't really talked too much about, I guess we touched on it, but a lot of debris was found. Where you would think the debris would be if it went down in the Southern Indian Ocean, which is not where he says it went. He says that it went north whenever they turned and that it ended up in Kazakhstan. And so,
very, very far away from the final destination.
To contend with this debris, he's like, well, the guy who's finding most of the debris, he's a Russian spy. And you're like, well, that's nuts. You know, like, how are you getting there? And he's like, well... he spent most of the 90s in Russia and has many corporations that were founded there. I'm like, whoa,
bro, I'm telling you.
He found something.
It's hard to believe the Indiana Jones guy. I'm saying.
I don't think it's hard to believe him at all, dude. He takes the survivors' families that want to go with him. He takes them down there, and they discovered stuff. Like anyone who's walked that ocean that's on the documentary found stuff that looks like it's from a plane.
Did they discover stuff, or the way that I saw it and my dad watched it because he brought it up was like that guy just took that thing over to the family. You know, like he found it and he walked it over to the family and then he had the family hold it. That's kind of what it looked like. But
yeah, I don't know. So the one other important thing to note is the thing you were talking about earlier, the largest piece of evidence, has nothing to do with him. He didn't find that.
Right.
He's not claimed to have found that. So already we've got two independent discoveries of materials that appear to be from the plane by different people. Like, if you just look at it like that, I think it's not overwhelming evidence, but it points strongly to the idea that this plane broke up over the sun and in the ocean, sure, then washed up there.
The one piece of physical evidence that was found, not by crazy Indiana Jones guy, did have a serial number shaved off of it.
It wasn't shaved off. It just wasn't there.
Like, oh, right. There's no evidence
of how it was.
Right. It was a riveted sort of thing that is supposedly meant to withstand and withhold extreme pressures of flight. So
yeah, no.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that's not true, for sure.
It's pretty freaky. I'd take that as serious. Like the way that these things are designed is that they're ready for an event like this. They want all of the pieces to be labeled so that whenever something like this happens, that we can be able to recreate, you know, what caused the plane to go down. And so, you know, they're starting from square one of like, how do I make it so that people can know what part this plane came from? And we don't know what part the part that was found came from. That's real weird.
So cumulatively put together, it
but
truly
whenever,
is.
Whenever you put it next to, there's these beaches where that are like, you know, kind of in the same general tidal area or like direction. You know, they're not like next to each other, but it's like if a plane went
down
here.
The Madagascar realm.
And then months and months later, you started finding debris. This is where you would find it. Like he says, like that's where he started searching. His whole story makes sense to me, where he's like, I wanted to find pieces of the plane. I talked to people who understand how ocean currents work and said, if it went down here where we think it went down in the southern Indian Ocean, where would the pieces wash up? They told me these beaches. I walked those beaches. Every time I did, I found plastic that seems to me like it's obviously from the plane.
Sure.
That, like, I don't know. I'd say,
while acting as an agent of the Russian government,
it's not 100%. You know, like, nothing in this story is 100%.
Right.
But that's pretty high. It checks out.
Yeah, like, that's what it feels like, though, is that the cumulative effect of all of this stuff together still, like, there's not one overwhelming sort of conclusion by any means. It remains a huge mystery. You could lean that way fairly easy, but it's not looking good.
From the standpoint of, you know, like from when there's starts to be trouble where like the communications get turned off on the way, you know, to the Vietnam coast. I think that given that you've got the radar pings at the other base that say that some kind of unidentified plane flew over them. You've got the satellite data that says that, you know, I got a lot of questions about, but there is satellite data that says that they kept going and went over the southern Indian Ocean. And given that you had two independent discoveries of debris where you would expect the debris to be if it did crash in the southern Indian Ocean, it seems to me like the most likely thing is that, in fact, it did go to the southern Indian Ocean. But I land on the, you know, like, how does it get to the southern Indian Ocean? The pilot wanting to fly it there makes a lot of sense in a vacuum. But I just don't know why. I see no I'm unconvinced that he wanted to commit suicide. You
right.
know? Like, just whenever you look at the rest of that stuff. And like you said, that the final report, you know, like the government looks at all the evidence and says, we don't find it likely that he wanted to do anything. We've got no indication that he wanted to do anything. You know, I don't know. It's just, there's so much mystery left, and I suspect that there always will be.
Yeah, I don't think it doesn't seem like we're devoting our international resources to come together to try to figure this one out.
I mean, they did put in a lot, but at some point,
yeah, it seems case closed at this point.
What can you do? Yeah.
The only thing we can do is you and I.
Yeah. No, and I mean,
keep our search open.
You know,
we go on another road trip this year to Madagascar.
Alien beams in, like I'm saying. Just.
Yeah.
It can, I mean, you know, at that point, it's just so outside of, there's so many unknowns introduced that you're like, okay, fine, whatever. You know, like, why would they want to go to the Southern Indian Ocean? I don't know their ways, you know? Like, yeah, I don't know. It's a wild thing. I do recommend the Netflix documentary. I don't think we really spoiled it.
I think you could probably go read it.
Yeah.
You know, probably learn as much as we've said, but you should hear these compelling and pretty exciting figures.
Yeah. And it's only three episodes. It's a pretty tight documentary.
Yeah, I ripped through that and then immediately ripped through the Murdoch documentary immediately after.
Yeah, that was
me and
too.
Stan stayed up till about 3:30 watching Netflix the
just
other night.
Just doing some research?
Just hanging out with the newly retired pops.
Yeah, I don't think me and my dad are going to hang out till 3:30.
Try it out.
Ever.
Stan likes the
party. I'm not against it. I'll be there.
Yeah.
I'm there till 3:30 all the time.
Yeah.
He just never shows up. He goes to bed around 9. But yeah, I don't know. Dirtbag Culture Hour. We'll kind of put together our final thoughts next on 97.1 The Freak.